pewtering my lance.
Pewtering?
Pewtering.
Oh, I don't know that. Right. Huh. You there? Did I lose you?
Bill? No, no, I'm here. Bill might come in.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Let me turn up a little bit. Can you hear me?
Yep. No problem.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, I don't know how I can eliminate this buzz.
It's probably fine.
Is it me?
Yeah. No, apparently I have a buzz.
You have a buzz? I have a buzz.
It's from all that chai I was just drinking.
All right. Yeah, maybe I should. That'd be crazy. All right. Here's what I'm going to do. You guys chat for a little bit. I'm going to try and locate my little dog, and then we'll get started.
That's what Percival said.
So is Percival? Oh no, I don't want to. I got some shit. But
you got some shit.
I'm gonna follow your lead. I'm here as a.
I don't know how deep we're gonna go. I've gone crazy. So, you go as deep as. I'm like surrounded by books here and papers. And
yeah. We have to parse or pierce the words.
Pierce the veil. Yeah.
This shit is loaded.
Yep.
Oh my god, it's loaded.
So have you read some of this? Or?
You know, I did an Olympic rabbit hole dive this afternoon when I got home from work.
Okay, that's good.
And yeah. As I scrolled through the bullet points, it was just like, ooh, ooh, ooh. You know, it was like, oh my god, everything is crackling in this motherfucker. It's beautiful.
No, it does. It's like, this is... This encompasses all of literature, basically all of modern literature, directly. Yeah.
Do we contain literature as far as a Western perspective in this case?
Yeah, that's a good question. Like if there are other branches.
Western literature pierce the veil of the external to some extent, or?
So it's interesting that you bring that up, because maybe this would be kind of the Joseph Campbell talking point,
mm-hmm.
potentially.
Mm-hmm. Arguably it all comes from the same root, right?
Yeah.
It comes from the same root, branches out, and then and then there are cross connections afterwards, right?
Once it gets into the ether, it's fair game. But its genesis seems to be from the word.
Well, so interesting.
That's a good sentence.
We should let's do it. Okay, we'll do it, and we'll get there, and we'll. We'll see what you guys have to say. All right, let's just make sure we're recording. Yes, recording. Recording.
Yep. Bill is recording again. So is that, are we recording twice or is that?
Well, I just started a recording just to have a backup just in case.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it records twice. It doesn't. One doesn't delete the other.
Ooh, that's a good. Should I stop?
I don't know. Like I no longer see that Doug is recording.
It.
If it one negates the other.
So Douglas is recording. So I think we're gonna stick with this line.
Okay.
Line in the pond that we're fishing in.
Yeah, I pulled
You're
up
the king, Douglas.
dubious. It's the dubious king. All right, here we go. Ready? Here we go. Okay, my journey. Let me go to Skype and do this, and then I'll tell you my journey. I'm going to do this.
I feel like I'm on acid too. So, but yeah, back to Doug.
So, I don't know why, Znor, but I spent a lot of time with Peridur, and like Mabon, and there was something about those tales that really captured my attention. I spent like a full month doing those over and over again, just because they're really hard to follow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, especially the first three. Maybe we could. That's one thing we just talk about, just briefly. What break down the Mabinogion for people who haven't read it?
Well, so there's some speculation that maybe Pryderi is Peridur. So he.
Yeah.
Is,
so that's a really interesting idea. Yeah.
That but he.
Yeah.
Is,
tell about him.
Well, so Peridur or Percival. So these are kind of like. They're the fool from the tarot card, where their good luck is kind of part of their charm. But I think I liked the character a little better as portrayed in the Mabinogion. I think from the French perspective, Percival was maybe a little more brusque, I thought. But I don't know if that was just me. But yeah, so... Pryderi is like a hero, and there's a lot about his birth and kind of like otherworldly things. And so within that, the Mabinogion, there really is this feel of going back and forth between reality and the other. Like,
Pryderi was he becomes the lord of Hades, basically, right? Of Awan. However you pronounce it, right? Like which is the underworld or fairy world, right?
Right.
So he becomes lord of that after swapping wives and swapping the whole resemblance life of the actual lord of Hades. Then you have those first four. It's called the four branches of the Mabinogi. Those are the weirdest ones. Yeah, they're all connected, and they have Pryderi all the way through it, right? And they're insane trips, like just like berserk, these things. Like they're the weirdest things you'll read, right?
They've got the bad guys or the good guys are hanging in bags from the rafters, and then they're whacking him with sticks and stuff.
Oh no, he's crushing their heads. Like their heads in his hands. And then that's the story of that's Branwen, the daughter of Lear, right? And Lear traces back to the Irish god Lear as well, right? And then Bill will know this. The son of Lear is Mananan, who Joyce, he comes up in Finnegan's Wake all the time. He's the god of the sea. So Branwen, her brother is this guy Bran, who's a massive giant, yeah? And he ends up invading Ireland because he finds out that Branwen has been mistreated by her husband, the Irish king. And he... instead of taking a ship, he's so big he can't fit on a ship, so he just wades across to Ireland, and they see his head coming across the ocean towards Ireland, and they think it's a mountain moving across the ocean.
They get there,
he's just this massive head, and they have this war that kills everybody, like almost everybody in Ireland, and only like seven people survive who
just one family.
Yeah. And then Bran, he ends up getting stabbed or something. It's the same story of the Fisher King, gets stabbed in the leg or something. And so then he tells them to cut off his head
and take it to London or Whitehall.
Yeah, take it to Whitehall in London, and it survives as a head. They spoke to it for like 80 years as a head. And then they became the Society of the Head, Pryderi and all the other British kings that followed from that became the Society of the Head. And then later on, this is the weirdest thing, is that later on, this is the big difference of Peredur, the Welsh story in Mabinogion, and then the story of the Grail from Cretchen and then Wolfram, is that there is no Grail in Peredur. It's replaced by a head in this sort of bloody platter. Like this,
oh, yeah.
This head is the central piece of what they believe. So that is the Grail, you know, that's what gets replaced.
It's a saucer shaped. It's a UFO. A head on a platter. Isn't it?
Yeah, in a way, it's like
it's a hyperdimensional object.
This is an interesting thing too. I was reading about
John the Baptist. It's all coming from John the Baptist.
Yeah. That's a key thing. But even in
bring me his head on a platter.
In Celtic mythology,
bring me John the Baptist here, but don't bring John the Baptist here because John the Baptist has dreadlocks and smells of shit and is a lunatic. But just bring me his head on a platter.
There's so many strange connections, right? Because John the Baptist is such a huge figure for the Gnostics, right? And this is what Weston traces the tradition through, is all these different Gnostic groups, right? There's that connection. But in Celtic mythology, it's like skulls were venerated, like because that was the center of this kind of creative power, right? Which is also procreative power. So they had the sense that fertility, and this is what comes in with the wasteland and the Fisher King and all of this
stuff.
Fertility is connected to the wound in the leg and the balls, and then the head coming up, right? And so in the ancient Celts used to have skull cups, yeah. So this idea that the Grail and the skull are basically the same, you know, it's the same sort of symbol. This symbol of fertility is the head,
because we can shift the sense ratios depending on the media that we interact with and epigenetically choose our reality tunnels in the parlance.
So in a way the symbols itself are interchangeable, right? Like this is an interesting part, right? This is a guy.
It's about control. Grail is about having your hand around a stem. You know what STEM stands for? Self-transforming elf machine.
Oh. Yeah, that's great.
The that's what they want. STEM of the Grail they want to teach at the big is universities. The DMT experience. It is.
So didn't they go in Bronn to the other world, the fairyland, and like there was
the
like this gold,
land.
The golden grail that like restored life or something?
So there's a grail in that tradition as well, right? Like so the grail gets, or it, we shouldn't call it the grail, whatever this cauldron.
It's like it's a cauldron, whatever, right?
We'll call it the grail because this is the grail talk. This is. The center of gravity, right? Maybe this is me contradicting my past self because I was like, Znor said the Grail is the Grail. Am I buying into it? Shit, sorry.
I don't know that he said that. That's
sort of a meaningless statement because we don't know what the Grail is, right? So the Grail is the Grail. Right?
You're looking. So it's not a metaphor. You know, like last time I'm saying, well, everyone has a Grail quest. What does that mean to you?
Oh, it's I see what like, you mean. I see what you mean. Yeah.
My Grail quest is the Grail. And so
I totally agree with that. Then.
Really in a silly way, because somewhere in the middle, I did that. And I'm like, apparently there are two, what are those called? Artifacts in Spain that people believe are the Holy Grail. you know.
Yeah, I don't believe that, but I see what you mean now. Yeah, the grill so is like, not a metaphor.
You can literalize, and that's not what I'm saying. It's like I'm looking for the cup of Christ.
Right.
Like, I think you could find the truth probably better in the Indiana Jones film somehow. Like, you know, like the grail is the thing that imbues life with the thing that we need. So, okay, this is the interesting takeaway I had from Wolfram. There was definitely human compassion was at its root. And the point of the story was that Parzival had to ask what was ailing his uncle, right? Yes. And that had to do with humanity, less about the mystery. The mystery is important, but, you know, he's trying to be a good human. Whereas with Chrétien, it seems like it was, why aren't you interested in the mystery? You know, like, why didn't you mention the lance?
So yeah, it's a much broader question that he should be asking. In Chrétien.
Right. Yeah. And so it's not about the king. It's about the mystery for some reason is what I kind of landed on with. I need to do it probably again. Mm-hmm. But it's hard because it doesn't go. You know, he doesn't finish it. And so you really just don't know. But then we haven't talked about Gwalchmai or Gawain or Gawain.
Yeah, Gawain, yeah.
And he is just as important as Percival.
Well, Weston believes, like, based on the first continuation, which he thinks comes from the oldest source, the oldest sort of bardic or troubadour source, kind of Welsh troubadour source, which is this guy, Bleheris, right?
Right. Gotta love Bleheris.
Who also is called Blaise in Robert the Boron, right? Like, And so she thinks that the first continuation has the oldest story, in which Gawain is the Grail Knight. Gawain is the one who actually retrieves the Grail. And for her, it makes more sense because Gawain is the nephew of Arthur. And all of these old stories, archetypally, it's the nephew.
Yeah.
And the uncle, like even with Tristan, you know, it's Tristan and King Mark, you know. And that kind of story goes all the way back, you know. So it could be Gawain who's the head there, so to speak. Speaking of the head, I just want to, just before we get off that topic, I just want to read this part because this is, the head thing is such a weird thing. This is from Onions, this guy, this scholar who talks about the origins of European thought. It's an old book, but excellent. He said, if the head was a source of procreation, fertility, we can perhaps also explain the Welsh version of the Grail, Peredur, in the Mabinogion, in which the Grail vessel, which has long been recognized as a fertility symbol, and which, like the cornucopia, was a miraculous source of supply, is replaced by a head on a dish. Jessie Weston has related this version in a curious statement in the York Breviary. She says, but that too has lacked explanation. With a significant trace, his severed head was placed as reason. His severed head was perhaps a reason why John was chosen by the church to replace the fertility god worshipped at midsummer for his fires. The account of the head worshipped by the Templars, they also worshipped a head. John the Baptist was their patron. The loss of the head in the Peredur story, like the loss of hair. And then this idea, Loomis is another scholar, correlating various versions, urges that the head in the dish is the head of Bran or Braun, i.e. the Grail King. If this is so, since the point of the maiming of the king in the Grail legend is his loss of procreative power, attended by a loss of fruitfulness in nature, this alternative form of maiming, the loss of his head, the other was a wound in his thigh, would be the loss of that power and would imply for the head the value I've suggested. That idea, like the connection between the creative power in the head and the procreative power of the loins, right? And then how the damage to the loin, to the king of the land, causes the wasteland. And so Weston thinks that's the she thinks that's the earliest version of the legend, and that goes way, way back, thousands of years.
Do you guys connect Bron with LeBron in your graphs?
He's called Hebron, so that's even closer.
So LeBron James, King James, right, is the Fisher King, and his cup is an empty grail, like his hoop, his Saturnine hoop. He plays basketball with the loins, not with the creativity of the head.
Yeah.
His predecessor, Giordano, Michael Giordano Bruno, Jordan the Bull, established the field that is the game. But, you know, and I have no negative things to say about LeBron James. I think the human being LeBron James is the real deal. Like, is probably as honest and forthright as a fucking person could be. But Bron, his brand, oh my Lord, is it fit some kind of angle here? Because his superstar is sterile for some reason. You know what I'm saying?
Mm. Did he suffer from a wound to the thigh or the groin?
He might with this Diddy shit. I don't know if he's connected to Diddy.
Was it Alan that did some Suicide King work on? There was a basketball player he was interested in for a time.
Well, we used to interview Mr. Alexander.
Well, no, sure. There was
Alexander.
There was this during his Suicide King's moment. There was like a basketball shoe blow up. I don't know who blew out his shoe.
I can't remember that.
I remember.
Did we derail you again though, Doug? You were on a roll.
I'm guilty as sin.
I don't know if I.
Yeah.
Well, so. All right, so. We didn't talk about the elucidacion, or however you want, the elucidation.
Right. Yeah, that's
which I didn't even know about until this go, mm-hmm. And it's enigmatic and strange.
Yes.
And. It's
seems
interesting.
To explain a lot.
Well, it also makes things more complicated too.
Have you read that one, Doug, Bill?
The Elucidations?
Yeah.
Just the Wikipedia.
Can you give a summary, Doug? Or?
Well, it's almost like it's, hey, here are the mysteries. We're going to tell you all about the mysteries, but we can't do it too soon.
Yes. You know?
And so you have to be ready for the mysteries when we're there. And then it kind of goes through the mysteries, but it doesn't really tell you, but it kind of tells you.
But then it has the maidens at the grove, you know, who end up getting raped by these bands.
And so that's a different take on the wasteland. Right?
Yes. Yeah. So that I think that directly explains what happened, right? Like in a way, you know, it's like a, this loss of fertility, this loss of the original matriarchy, maybe, or whatever. Like, because that's how it we're talking about different cultures, right? That's how it presents itself in different cultures, like in India, right? Like Tantra comes around in these same centuries. Like, there's this tantric resurgence, right? And it's a return to the mother as well. Return to the mother, return to the lady and the goddess, right? But it's a return. So they're tapping back to this original fertility mythos that is based around the woman. So it seems like the Elucidations, it's telling a similar tale. There's the original loss of the garden, let's call it, right? And then these maidens who are guarding this well, and the well itself might be the grail, like this well of plenty. And they get despoiled by this bad band of knights, and then so you have this historic period of whatever you want to call it, patriarchy or dominator culture or whatever, and then you have the return of Arthur, or the first coming of Arthur, and then his round table who put an end to this, but they still have to recover the grail. There's still the quest to become the greatest knights in the world. Both both in prowess and in morals, and then become suitable bearers of the Grail. And basically, there's only one who can succeed.
It's odd, though, because you kind of learn that the Round Table is both like the progeny and a product of the rape of the maidens.
Yeah.
And so it's like it's yin and yang in that you have both there's some kind of strangeness about interpreting that
the happy fall, you know, that idea.
Yeah.
But it's interesting in Robert de Boron, he traces back the Round Table. Like his vision is incredible, right? Because he tells the whole story from the beginning to as far as it can be taken.
So
which is the death of Arthur.
Okay, we're gonna get there. He goes all the way from. But I'm wondering about how does de Boron compare to Monmouth in terms of. Are you able to talk about that?
Yeah, so Monmouth, his book is the history of the kings of Britain. And that comes out, it's published around like 1136 is the usual date for it. He's using these older myths. And again, he's saying he doesn't completely clarify his sources. He's getting all these weird shadowy sources as well. But he compiled this kind of prose history, and it traces the lineage of the kings of Britain, which mean the rulers of Britain before the Saxon invasion, right? Before the Anglo-Saxons, right? The original people, the original Celtic people in Britain. And he
can
traces
I ask how long it is, just real quick? Volumes, ages.
It's just one volume. Well, I don't know if it's called more than one volume, but this one, what is it? It's like over 300 pages.
300 pages
or less. But so he's tracing it back from the fall of Troy, right? And this is the traditional history of Britain, is that you have the fall of Troy, and then Aeneas escapes, ends up going to Italy and forming Rome, right? Like founding Rome eventually, right? But then his great-grandson, this is a guy called Brut, he sort of he suffers a scandal. I think he accidentally kills his father, has to leave or something. He goes back to Troy and finds all these Greeks who that have been captured by the Greeks or made into slaves by the Greeks, by the Greek conquerors. He frees them, and then they all set off in a ship together to Britain, basically. And they have this vision of the goddess Diana who tells them to go to Britain. When they get to Britain, it's unoccupied except for this race of giants. And it's called Elbion at that time, and it's named after the chief giant. And this is where William Blake takes it off. You know, he spins off from there. And so they end up essentially butchering the giants, right? And then they set up their own realm of Britain there, and there's all these different battles and feuds among the reigning families and stuff.
What year are we talking?
Well, that would be way back. Like that's
foundational, like BC.
So we're talking like 4 or 5 generations after the fall of Troy. Yeah. Like Homeric term.
But it is considered like pseudo history. So it's like pulpy stuff that's fun. I mean, they're establishing the lineage.
It wasn't considered that at the time. For the longest time, it was considered like to be genuine history, right? And then
it just was, yeah.
Yeah. And then there was no major distinction like there is now between myth and history, right? Like it's that wasn't a concern for people. Yeah,
the news.
Yeah, because it's more about meaning, like what gives meaning, what provides meaning, right? But anyway, so from his book, you have these kind of poetic renderings of it, which I've got too. I haven't read these yet. One is by this guy called Wace, he's from France. Oh no, he might be from Britain. And then another version from Layamon a little later. And these are sort of poetic takes on history of the kings of Britain. But that's where Arthur enters in. But Monmouth doesn't talk about the Grail or the Round Table or these things. But where Robert the Boron uses Geoffrey of Monmouth is especially in the tale of Merlin, right? So he has Robert the Boron has this big story about Merlin, and Merlin is sort of it's the connecting tale from the story of Joseph of Arimathea, which is the story of where the Grail came from a Christian point of view, which is the cup of Christ at the Last Supper. From there, and then the last part of it is basically the Percival story leading into the death of Arthur. But in between is the story of Merlin, right? And Merlin, this is where it gets into it. This is just a trip, right?
He's like Jesus, right? He doesn't have a father, his mother. Yeah. It's like Darth Vader.
He is, according to Robert the Boron, this doesn't come out so explicitly in Geoffrey de Monmouth, but his story is there, right? That, yeah, Merlin doesn't have a father. He has a demon as a father, right?
Okay.
But de Boron goes on to explain why he was a demon, and it was basically a conspiracy of hell as a revenge to the incarnation, right? Like, so in Christian mythology, this is not even biblical, but Christ goes down and harrows hell and releases all the saints and stuff from hell and basically overthrows hell, comes back up from to be resurrected, right? Like that, he does that in the 3 days when he's dead. So at the time of Arthur, right, or at the time of actually before that, Merlin, the demons decide to take revenge, and so they have an incubus come down and seduce this noble woman, Merlin's mother, and the plan is to make Merlin an antichrist, basically, right, the counterpart of Christ. But Merlin finds out about it. He finds out about the plot and rejects the entire thing. And so because of that, he's still been blessed by the demons to know everything about the past. But then because he rejects it, he knows everything about the future as well. He's blessed by God. So he's the story of this kind of redeemed antichrist, or an antichrist who doesn't take his path, which is...
it's nuts.
It's fascinating. And then he gets involved. Merlin gets involved to the court of Uther Pendragon, who's Arthur's Arthur's father, right?
Right.
And
yeah.
Arthur's father wants this noble woman as his wife. He's just obsessed about this woman. This guy comes into court. This king comes into court. Uther Pendragon is kind of the emperor, and the king comes to the court who pays allegiance to Uther Pendragon. But Uther sees the king's wife, and he just becomes obsessed by her. And finally, he ends up completely flirting with this woman while her husband's at court. Her husband finds out about it. She tells her husband how Uther's coming on to her. And then, of course, they just leave, like, suddenly. And this is a huge affront to Arthur. Like, nobody ever does that, right? And so he sends out his army to siege this guy's castle. And so they have this massive battle, like just massive siege. And then Merlin ends up disguising Arthur to take on the resemblance of this king. And he comes in and sleeps with this woman. And then she later gives birth to Arthur. And that's the story of Arthur. So it's a conspiracy by Merlin to create this bloodline. And Merlin's supposed to be this saintly saintly figure. So he has to atone for that after. But I don't know. It just shows the complete madness behind all of this. You know, it's like it's such a deep thing.
So the other thing to connect back to the last time, I think I was talking about sync, the sync's place as a driving thing, and then my own understanding of it and it as a movement, and like just curious about that side of things. And so the thing that was brought up that I kind of arose this time is how similar to what Bill was talking about earlier, the internet taught us that we're like connected, like we're all connected, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so the zeitgeist became this at that moment. So somewhere around, I think the first iPhone was like 2011, right?
2008. Somewhere.
Okay.
I got my first in 2009.
They really came online, you know, right around 2012, of course. And that's when, you know,
when a billion smartphones hit the globe, is in 2009.
Right, right.
And so it just feels like, you know, everything is connected, or it's like a mutually arising, or what like everything is just happening in this one moment, right?
Here so comes it's everybody.
Like, yeah.
11:32.
The paradigm is you know, like we're worried about the new world order, but you know, like the NOW, the now, is kind of the other side of this thing, where it's just like we're all connected, all in this one moment. And so there's the internet that's like the training wheels, but then you also have the folks that think the ayahuasca is part of this training wheel, that we're teaching our brains to be connected all the time.
What's stronger? What's stronger? Didn't you take ayahuasca with Jake?
I didn't.
Who did you take ayahuasca
with? I didn't take it. I didn't want to blow my system, and so I had to come back to my wife and family.
Where's I going with that?
you have to, Doug. You have to go back and ask the proper question.
It was really good, but no. Wait, I said
the interesting thing is that if I were to if I were to catalog or categorize where we're at now, it feels like everything is fragmented. Like Twitter used to be this thing that connected us, and now it's like a thing that divides us.
How connected were we in 2012, all sharing the word synchromystic for the first time?
We're like,
remember how connected we were then?
All the tools were leading us to more connection, and now it's almost like the tools are leading us to more faction. So like I'm thinking about the fragmented media.
It's hallucination of fraction. We're so united that we're doing the thing again, right? Like, we have to stand on foundations. Like, the internet was around for 10 years, man. And then all of a sudden it changed. Right? Like, I locked into, like, a conversation, and now that conversation hasn't gone away. It just got absorbed. Like Alex Jones is mainstream.
Yes.
At least in my algorithm. Like, that should not have happened. So we have to stand on foundation. Like, literature allows you to stand on foundation because it's bound and it's aged and it's dated, and that's what they stood on when it was produced. So like you could win arguments, you know.
It's interesting if we use the Grail Quest as a metaphor, right? Like, so it's there's the original coming to the Grail Castle, right, where Percival or whoever, Gawain or later on Galahad or whoever, comes there. And they don't ask the proper question. They don't fulfill the ritual in the right way.
Yeah. The question. It's
basically what happens, right? And then they have to go out and face all of these trials and tribulations for years, at times thinking that God has completely forsaken them. Right? And but then they come back, and they they might come back to the Grail Castle. Like, if you look in the continuations, Percival comes back, fucks up again. He has to leave and do all these other side quests and stuff, and he comes back again. But if you think of that as a metaphor of what's going on now with the internet, like this idea of the potential there of everything coming together at once, right? Which was our vision of what was going on, right? The Grail being attained at that moment. But then the ritual is fucked up for some reason. We didn't have the power. We weren't righteous enough. And so now we have to scatter again. It's all fractured. And eventually we have to come back again. There'll be a retrieval, right?
Because we look at media from an outsider's perspective as I've been rewatching True Detective in black and white on a projected screen. It's the first season specifically. And it's just such a victory of everything we're talking about. You're talking about the Grail Quest, right? But I lost my train of thought. Fuck. All right, back to you.
So I'm reminded of the Rich Company in the Elucidation. I think they're called the Rich Company.
Those are the bad knights, yeah.
There's bad knights and there's good knights, but there's ones that are like, it seems like joy is their motivating factor.
Mm.
And that just reminds me of the, like, that's what was, it was so fun and interesting with when you think as this quasi-religious movement where you're spreading the good news.
No, that exactly. It had a substance to it that was, you could pass around. That's why the blogs existed, because these were like people taking a cheese knife to the whole brick and just saying, I got a slice. I got a slice. Like, I got a huge chunk from Kevin Helcott. I got a huge chunk from Doug Bowles or from Two Shots to Shaman or whatever Wills was. You know what I mean? Like, but it's not around anymore.
But I think that's like things evolve. Like, you can't, if you don't go with the flow, you know, it's not alive anymore.
Yeah, that idea in the Grail legends about just dropping the reins of your horse and letting it go where it wants to, like, and taking your own path through the forest.
And so the blogs, I for whatever reason, I agree with you, Bill. Like, there was something so special about that early incarnation, because once it moved to like Facebook, like, it was a lot easier and more convenient, but it just sucked so much life out and creativity out.
We don't get pills anymore. We get Molly. We get molecules. You know what I mean? We get tweets and we get assemblages of tweets and we get, but we don't get the full dose or something. Like, I don't know what that is, but that seems,
It's the return to the
a dilution of what the Grail contains.
It's a return to the wasteland, right? Like a
yeah, that's what it is. Because
because we missed something, right? Like, something was missing. Obviously there's a lot missing.
But it was my fault. All right, provide, I'll take the blame. I didn't ask the fucking question.
It does provide hope that there could be a return at some point, right?
Or else we became the maimed kings, right? Well, now we have to rely on the next generation.
Well, you remember in Wolfram, right? Like, Wolfram, who is it? Who is his guru? I can't remember his name.
Kyot.
No. In the story, Parzival's.
Gurnamons?
Yeah, Gurnamons. Or, I think it's Gurnamons who said, like, you've done the miraculous. You've done something miraculous. You've changed the will of God. Because normally.
Oh, right. Okay.
Normally, if you fuck up the ritual, right, you can't get back.
You can't get
back. But you did. You did through your own feats of knightly prowess and through your love of Condamiris, right?
Condviramor?
Condviramor, yeah, that's right. And then he attains the quest at the end, you know. So there's a sort of hope there, you know, which is great.
But I also think about, like, in Inception, you know, where, like, they go into the dream so deep, the one guy gets lost for years and years and years. And, you know, the line, "Do you want to die alone as old mm-hmm. men?" And then you just wake up and you come out of the dream and you're young again.
What is how do you connect that with Tenet? Because it's kind of the same mechanism, but on a much different scale. Right? Because he chews the cyanide thing and he's alive again, right?
Yeah, I've got to watch Tenet again. I only saw it in an airplane. I couldn't concentrate enough on it.
I needed to do the same. Yeah.
To be fair, nobody understands Tenet.
It's like that earlier movie, that indie movie, which was about time travel and like splitting.
Memento.
No, it's
Pie?
More independent. No, it's way more.
Together forever.
It's incredibly independent, like indie film. I can't remember what it is. So,
okay. So what we haven't talked about though, which is kind of fascinating to me, is that. So if you think of just the okay, so maybe this is just the normal lead up. So Dan Brown and the Da Vinci Code and how. Little old ladies, you're buying the Da Vinci Code at their Fred Meyer and reading this novel about Jesus. You know, so the Grail becomes this bloodline.
Right, which blood, holy Grail.
Right. Yeah. And so, but the mystery's there at the same time, even though they're kind of, you know, they're trying to literalize the Grail in some way. You know, it's still fertility. It's still, you know, it's still... the mystery of life, but it's, you know, it's Jesus's children or, you know, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Did you guys geek out about Dan Brown and the mysteries in Dan Brown and read Dan Brown and watch the movie and were captivated by that on some level? Or did you know that it was schlock?
I had read Holy Blood, Holy Grail like years and years. Like, I think I read it in the 90s, you know, so I already knew the basis for the Dan Brown stuff before it happened. And so I wasn't so excited about it because I already knew the deeper stuff, you know? I liked it well enough.
Do you remember the gutter that Holy Blood, Holy Grail existed in the mid 90s? Like, no one was reading that shit. That was such gutter.
Like, exactly right, but it was like people who were buying tarot cards in the 90s too.
Well, I mean, I'm just saying that like the fact that Ron Howard would direct the Graham Hancock version of Holy Blood, Holy Grail for a Hollywood screen just what? How many years later? 7 years later?
Tom Hanks, like they had big stars.
Big star. Like that, it would percolate to that level. Like
all of the super underground stuff that was going on in the 90s is now just complete mainstream. Yeah. Everything.
Yeah.
Well, people who don't read books were buying that to read it because the world was just captivated by.
Well,
which is hilarious because, I mean,
people don't forget. You don't forget. But, I mean, Kennedy assassination happened in 1963, and there were people who knew that it was fake in 1963, right? Human beings lived and talked about it being fake. Not, they couldn't kill everybody, right? Why didn't the message spread? Why didn't it go viral? Because if you win against TV, you get obliterated. You know what I mean? You shut the fuck up. Don't bring that around here. So, see, this is where I trail, man. Gotta help me.
Yeah, in the 60s, you also had the kind of birth of independent underground newspapers, right? Where that was kind of the early version of the internet in a certain way, right? But in a way, it was even,
so there was
even weirder, you know?
Like, different speakeasies that people, so like the Beats, like I heard Andras Jones talk about that, where like these different collectives and collections of folks, they all were, you know, there was something that drew them somewhere in place and time, because that's how it had to be back then. But the unique thing about our time was we didn't have to leave. We didn't have to all go to New York and meet each other and then go on our adventure. We met.
There's no pilgrimage.
We met online.
Except Winnipeg.
And then we started meeting in real life and having these different adventures.
But not us.
Now the pilgrimage is Bill and Dave's backyard.
Yeah, no, totally. Totally.
Did Dave and Joe Alexander, they shared an apartment. That was real, right?
No, I just think he came out to visit Dave a couple of times.
Yeah, I think they...
And he played for the fucking Golden State Warriors D-League team. That's what it was. He lived in Santa Cruz or something.
Okay, they lived in the same town.
Yeah.
Yeah, and
that's crazy.
Dior came through Santa Cruz. It's insane.
It was way back, yeah. Like that was mid-90s.
It's all converging, man.
I don't know. I feel like we had our, you know, where the universe contracts, expands, and then it contracts.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I'm with you there. I'm just saying the Santa Cruz connection is kind of nutty, because Rob Anton Wilson's from Santa Cruz, Philip K. Dick has been in Santa, like McKenna's been in Santa Cruz, like everyone's been in Santa Cruz.
It's kind of the Santa Cruz Berkeley corridor kind of thing.
Yeah, it's weird.
Yeah.
Yeah,
but, you're right. We have gone through some sphincter time. <you know?
laughs> Yeah.
But yeah, there's always a chance that it kind of reconvenes, though. That's the hope out there.
Well, our children's DNA has been irreversibly changed by the internet, and that's just a fact. And so we are black and white compared to their brains. They see us in black and white. Now, one could make the poetic argument that's been true all along, and that's why literature and history gives us comfort. But we've literally turned like pixelated to teenagers. Their brains are different than what 14-year-old brains ever were. You could say, oh, well, sure, basically, but no, fact. I mean, this is epigenetic molecular radio waves. This is what the Santa Cruz current has been talking about. This is what the Grail did, right? The blood of Christ does, or something. And is it the lance or is it the sword that draws the blood that we write the words with?
So we didn't talk about the sword.
People of the sword.
Because there's the sword that needs to be joined back together. Yeah. And he can't do it, right?
Well, that's Aragorn.
This is Tolkien, and this is Bobby Kennedy.
But I don't understand that myth either. So, like, Peridor can put the sword back together twice, but he can't do it the third time.
Well, we write with the lance, but there are people who carry the sword. And there is a hierarchy, I think, ultimately, and there are times where the sword is dominant.
Well, except the lance is also a weapon of war, right?
True.
So it's, yeah.
We're always in war.
Yeah, so you have the, if you want to say that, yeah, the pen is mightier than the sword, right? So you have the pen and then the fountain, right?
Yeah, because we...
So that's the lance in the grail also,
this right? is the idea that we control the weather, the temperature with the lance. Right.
So again, if it's the pen and the fountain, right? Like the fountain itself is the medium, right? Because that's the actual ink on the paper, and the pen is just, that's the message, right?